ask the honourable members to introduce themselves. Other honourable members will join us very soon. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Shahid Issa, member of the committee.
Good morning, Kubas Murray, member of the committee.
General. General, introduce yourself. You're the member of the commission. Oh, yeah, that's why I wanted to know which camp are you wearing. Can we introduce ourselves once more? Defense Force Service Commission and UMBAT. There is only one UMBAT. Can we introduce ourselves? Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson Montemayor and honorary members. I am Professor Edna van Harte, Chairperson of the Defence Force Service Commission. I would like to ask the members of the Commission to introduce themselves.
Andrew Olomisa, Deputy Chair of the Commission.
Major General Retired James Henry April, part-time commissioner. Thank you.
Dipuom Velashi, part-time commissioner. Sabina Shapolosa, part-time commissioner.
Renfrew Christie, part-time commissioner.
Makeli Mukwepe, part-time commissioner.
Ian Robertson, part-time commissioner.
I'm Temba Matanzuma, the military ombud. Thank you.
From the office of the
Mpoma Kalimele, office of the military ombud.
Selomane Motsepe, Defense Force Service Commission.
Peter Nkavinde, Parliamentary Liaison Officer, Office of the Minister of Defense and Military Service.
Willie Baloy, Secretariat to the Commission.
Michaela Wolf from CNG.
We're done.
Vitaly Sovetenko from Russian Consulate.
Thank you very much. The honorable member who has just come in is Honorable Kova. You were not here when we introduced ourselves. General, how do I deal with you? Can we then go straight to our presentation by the Defense Force Service Commission, Professor Van Harte? Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. The objective of our presentation today is to enlighten the Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans on the measures in place to deal with areas of underperformance and any other resource challenges. The scopes we will deal with in a short introduction, areas of underperformance will be basically dealt with in three areas: mandates, strategic areas, and the budget, and we'll touch on two more additional challenges. The Portfolio Committee is aware of the mandate of the Commission, so I thought I won't really go into that, but we make recommendations on an annual basis to the Minister on improvement of salaries and service benefits, on policies in respect of conditions of service, and we promote measures and set standards to ensure effective and efficient implementation of policies on conditions of service within the Defence Force and make the recommendations to our minister in this regard. Now, our first area of underperformance, sir, was in the area of service benefits on salaries and service benefits to members. We were requested by our minister to look at the whole issue of delinking rank from salary. It's an issue that has been coming on over the years. Preliminary work, well, let me first give the reasons for the underperformance. We could not put a model on the table as yet a renewed one. The initial model that was presented to the Council on Defence in 2013 was too costly. Would have run to the tune of 1.45 billion in addition to other HR expenditures. What we have found is that in our commission, our research capacity is very limited, and something that perhaps we can pride ourselves on, but it is also harming us to some extent, is the fact that we haven't used consultants as yet to bring in additional capacity. Now, what did we have? What did we do in the meantime was to do preliminary research. And we also went on three benchmarking visits to SADC countries, Namibia, Botswana, and Tanzania. Our findings were mixed. Botswana, that went the way of delinking, has employed consultants and is going back to considering doing away with the delinking model. So there's a lot of work for us to be done in that way. But I can say, sir, that in spite of this, the Commission had other achievements. We were able to deal with the issue of awarding death benefits to beneficiaries who pass away while deployed in internal and external operations. Our committee, we have formed three committees. One is the Pay and Service Benefits Committee. Commissioner Mvelasi is the chair of that committee, doing excellent work there. And at the moment, they are looking at putting perhaps an alternate model on the table. We did make recommendations on cost of living adjustments for the 2015-16 financial year from private to colonel, and we forwarded that to our minister on the 31st of March. With through the committee that Commissioner Mvelasi is leading, she's been really active in liaising with stakeholders like SARS and public service and administration departments, etc., to make comparative analysis on this issue. The committee members also went with us to the benchmarking visits. In terms of conditions of service, I have to say to you, sir, that we have visited a number of bases during the financial year last year, and we got in-depth understanding of some of the conditions of service. We have not been able to really come up with groundbreaking recommendations based on our findings and our research. That's an ongoing issue for us. Once again, we are limited by the research capacity in the commission. We are down to one researcher. The other researcher has been sick since January. Then also in terms of corrective action, we have identified the major issues wrong in terms of conditions of service for our members. I just have to say to Chair and Honourable Members, we see the members face to face within rank group to really create environment, and I'm proud of the fact that we saw over 7,000 people face to face, members in uniform, and they trust us enough to talk out freely. We also have an idea of the service-specific conditions. Say, for instance, in the Air Force, you have the issue of limited flying hours for our pilots. It's really hurting them. So we are able to identify those issues. We are in the process of reviewing the level of posts in the commission, because it is kind of low for what we are expected, the in-depth work and the depth of the work that we want to accomplish. And our policy review committee that was not functioning well, when we got new commissioners, we have strengthened that committee with an additional member. Now, promotion of measures and setting of standards, I would say that was also an area of underperformance. Basically, once again, due to research, lack of research capacity. But we have taken some corrective issues, like we are trying to review the level of the secretariat. We are also, you know, we have 5 unfunded posts, so we're very poor on the ground, but those posts have now been funded, and we are in the process of interviewing people. In terms of achievements, we have submitted base reports to our minister in terms of conditions of service, etc., and we have provided the minister with our reports on the visits done to Tanzania, Botswana, and Namibia. In terms of strategic issues, I would once again say that we were limited, and that impacted on our service delivery. I would say the reason for the underperformance, in my opinion, and that of the commission, there was attrition due to death, and when Minister Zulu was appointed minister, the commission was down to 7 members, and the act requires of us to have 6 members to be curated. All the commissioners except for myself are part-time. Some of them have full-time jobs, and it became very difficult to have curated meetings. In terms of also, we have restricted powers. That's what we find on the ground in terms of the Defense Amendment Act 22 of 2010. We have no real powers. We make the recommendations, that is our mandate, but we don't really have the powers to make direct intervention. If you look at our regulations, you will find that the regulations are very limited. We had more powers originally in there, but the state law advisor said we can't go outside of the act, and we accepted that. But on the ground, we find that it kind of limits us. And this is not a good thing, especially because originally the soldiers were promised a commission that will have peace. I'm very encouraged to say to you, sir, that the Defense Force, the military leaders, are 100% behind us. They want the commission to have peace. What also, the corrective action, a letter was written to our minister. We requested 3 more commissioners. One was medical, one was legal, and one was HR experience, to try and beef up the commission. We got 3 commissioners. 2 of them, the one had HR experience, the other one medical. So we are hoping that we will grow in those areas. And we are in the process of working with our legal people to see how we can perhaps strengthen the what recommendations we can make to strengthen the act. We had our regulations gazetted. We had strategic meetings with stakeholders. In terms of our budget, I don't think as a commission we are complaining of our budget. We have sufficient money, but what is a major problem, and that impacts on our performance. We are treated almost like a military unit, and we are subjected to the same processes of procurement, etc. We find that we are not able to spend our money in time because of slow bureaucratic processes, etc. Now it comes to the point where we are hoping that in future we can develop greater independence around how we can spend our money. A good thing is that the Commission has now gotten the right. We didn't manage our own budget. It was first managed by HR, then it moved to the Minister's office. But since 1 April this year, we are managing, we are in control of the budget. The budget was further impacted by the fact that, for instance, Minister wanted us to go on deployment visits, but, you know, diplomatic relations, political sensitivities impact on how we can just move to another country, and so we could not go to our soldiers in deployed areas, something that is very upsetting to us, but we are still working, and we hope early January that we can make that visit. So in terms of the budget, the HR side, the vacant posts have been advertised, we've been granted the financial delegation, and we will seek greater independence around the budget. Okay. Now in terms of additional challenges, just two areas. The one is in the area of logistics, and this it sounds funny, but it impacted on our ability to submit timely reports. It is especially as with regard to IT procurement processes that we are very limited. One can understand from a defense perspective that people are a bit nervous around IT, and but in today's technology, I do not believe that a worker can function effectively if you don't have access to internet and email and so forth. Corrective actions, we've got a Wi-Fi router to boost our internet connectivity. We have acquired some IT software, and we have solicited authority to utilize external suppliers for maintenance and repair, but we don't have that right as yet. Okay, so. In terms of logistics, we are also underperforming in terms of OHS compliance, maintenance, and provision of suitable office facilities. We have limited office space at the moment. The Commission do not have their own offices. We are sharing facilities with the medical health, with the military health headquarters. And as a corrective action, perhaps in the future we will move towards acquiring our own office accommodation. In conclusion, I would like to say that the Commission has been supportive of the defense review from the outside. We did make an input into the Joint Standing Committee on Defense, but at the time when we had to go there, we were in Namibia, I think, Mr. President. But we just want to conclude to say that we support the recommendations promulgated by the Defence Review. It is really important that we do arrest the decline, and we think that the type of recommendations that we make to improve the conditions of service for our soldiers will be impacted positively if the necessary funding can be provided for the as requested in the defense review. I thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members for your attention.
Thank you very much, Prof. Over to you, honorable members. Honorable Swan.
Thank you, honorable Chair. First and foremost, I think we should commend the Commission for the sterling work they've done, and also within the time frames that the regulations were officially gazetted and they could get off to their work. I think it's a tremendous amount of work that has been achieved in a short period of time, and I think we want to acknowledge that. Secondly, I'd also like to acknowledge that the Commission has applied their mind, as they should as a Commission, to also look at the internal issues that actually impede the performance of the Commission itself, and also looking at corrective actions. The issue is, how can we support as a committee those things when the Commission reports directly to the Minister? And secondly, we are also not privy to all the reports that go to the Minister. It's only when the Minister releases the reports according to the Ministry that it will come then to Parliament to be tabled for us. But during the period of the year when everything is happening, of course, there's only contact between the Ministry and between the Commission itself. So what is our position? How do we assist in this regard? And what recommendations can we make to assist? I see there's a number of initiatives on the table. We don't have clear time frames of when policies will be completed. There's a reference to 10 policies, but in the presentation, just notes are made of a few of the policies. What are the exact policies that have been dealt with? And of course, we know those policies will be referred to the Minister for consideration before it actually comes to us as well. So what are the actual, and then of course there are certain initiatives that have been undertaken. What are the exact time frames that the Commission is looking at? There's some also concerning matters, like for instance the flying hours of pilots, the soldiers in the Air Force. How does it impact on their performance and the state of readiness of the Defence Force? And we have complained about it, but we have not done any research on the matter. The Commission has taken that responsibility. What are the time frames? Because those also have financial implications on the department itself. So I think there's a lot of issues that the Commission is actually doing that we have a concern about, which we can actually benefit from it as evidence-based, and therefore we should support an issue if funding needs to be increased in terms of the defense review and also in terms of the milestones that have been set. So I think those are key issues that we probably have to address. From the Commission side, I see there's a number of reasons for not being able to attend meetings or to undertake certain things because of conflict of meetings and people being part-time commissioners. But we try to avoid at all times matters like, for instance, the benchmark visit to Namibia, where there was fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which costed about 20% of the subsistence and travel budget. Could that have been avoided? How is arrangements really made timelessly? I also hear the chair of the Commission is actually saying that procurement, protracted delays, bureaucracy. We know the state, how it operates, is problematic. But the issue is, if we are aware of the environment of red tape, how soon do we start our processes and our planning to be able to accommodate those delays that we normally anticipate? Or do we also, as a Commission, start off late with planning those events, and therefore it leads to delays in the whole event taking place or the trip taking place, etc.? So I think we have to work with the environment. The Commission doesn't have the authority at this stage to run its own business like Arms Corps, to a large extent, is doing excellent work by managing everything on their own, and they actually report to us, and this time they got a clean audit as well, because they're able to manage all their affairs. In this instance, the Commission doesn't manage all its affairs. So here, the last time we had the report, and the report spoke to Honourable Chair about the Commission wanting to improve the status as an entity so that they can perform and do things more autonomously. Now, we've read that report that was last year, and I'm saying now, if that is the case, I see here the discussion is taking place. Which way is the discussion going? Is it in support of it, because the negotiation discussion is still very much underway? There's no clear direction being given to us except to say that it's still on the table for discussion. So that is another one. Research capacity for any commission is fundamental and critical. That cannot be compromised. If you compromise that, the whole performance and work of the commission is compromised. And I think if there is somebody that's off sick, then somebody else has to be seconded or somebody has to be contracted to come in to do the work. But the commission cannot function with one researcher, and there are so many parts that are being researched. So that's impossible. We cannot accept that. I'm very happy about the funded, unfunded post being funded now, which is 19. I just want to know the 3 additional. Does it mean the 19 plus 3? Is it inclusive?
For clarification, the 3 additional is commissioners. We have no new posts.
No new.
Only the 19.
Okay, 19. Thank you very much. So it will be additional commissioners. But the post, I'm very happy that the post are all funded, which means that the commission can function optimally. But still, if people are off sick, and the commission only has 2 researchers, it does compromise their position, and that needs to be addressed as a matter of urgency. I think that is one of those key issues. The other one, of course, condition of service. I think, to be realistic, we do face financial difficulties and there are constraints. So it's always a difficult one to make recommendations which increases the budget. We've been asked to cut actually 1 billion of all departments, every department, and now we're saying that we have to increase it over and above the normal HR expenditure by more than 1 billion. I think those ones will have to be re-looked at. The de-linking, I'm not hearing about international best practice. I only hear the SADC region being approached for similar practices. But internationally, is the de-linking model a better option, or is the normal salary scales applicable, and is that the best? So, and what are the actual motivation for de-linking it? Is it because some people are working outside their bands, or they need to earn more money and it can be accommodated under normally salary scaled employment or ranking? So, and of course the death benefits may be one of the issues that came up just recently is because of the car where a number of our soldiers died, and there was an appeal made to the ministry to look at the death benefits for families that have now suffered those losses, particularly the soldiers that are still very young and their families are still very young and they got children, etc. So I'm very happy that that initiative has been taken, but how far will that go? How far will that go? Okay, so we just want to know an update on that one. The soldiers deployed, in areas that normally is outside of Africa, the peace missions, we also like to visit some of those key areas because of the concerns we have. But I'd like to know from the commission side also, when people go into these sensitive areas, normally there's a whole vetting process and ministerial approval. Have all those measures been addressed in preparation for such? Because it's important that the commission actually do that work. Some of the times the committee, we do not have access. We're not allowed to go in certain areas. But the commission reports directly to the minister. So it is possible that if all the necessary measures are put in place, then the commission can actually execute their job and, of course, draft a full report on the issue. So have those measures been looked at? How soon can that be resolved? And if necessary, how soon can it be undertaken? We've discussed with the committee that we are concerned about the DRC, for instance, and that even if it's not the whole committee, but part of the committee, that will actually go and visit the soldiers in that region. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much. Any comment?
Yes, Chairperson, and I will do as you have requested us yesterday. So I will not repeat what my colleague has said, but just to say that I think you've got a very important work to do. I always believe that the biggest asset of any organization is the human asset. And if you look well after the human asset and you maintain it even better than the capital asset, then you will get a proper return. If not, then you will not get a return on that investment in the human capital, and because you need the humans to look after the fixed capitals, and like vehicles and buildings, etc., and weapons and all those kind of things, then you will also not get a return there. So this is a crucial work that you do. It is obviously the vehicle, and I know that you've got a passion to reinstall the pride in the Defence Force, among the Defence Force, but also in the eyes and according to the perception of the public and the citizens of South Africa. And I believe that a body like this is absolutely crucial and imperative to achieve that. So while there will be criticisms, and it will be constructive criticism, as my colleague has pointed out, and we might come over as sometimes hard and harsh on you, but it's because we share that vision of yours. So the one thing that I can just tell you and the commission, the general included, to proceed with the work, because, you know, when you know, and I know that you've got commissioners here, like the general, who know the defense force, because you have to know what goes on in the ground, what is the situation that soldiers faces and structures are facing to effectively deal with those challenges. So thank you very much, and I will stand with what my colleague has put the questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Marie. Honorable Koza.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, everyone. Let me join my colleague in appreciating the presentation. Looking at the presentation, I then fully agree that the Commission needs to be autonomous, to function autonomously. And it's also great to hear that in terms of budget, they are okay. So if they can be functioning on their own, probably they will be able to do much more better. And one thing that I like is that they were able to pick up the problems or the challenges of underperforming, and they came up with corrective actions. But it's a time frame that I'm worried about in those corrective measures. How do they plan? The time frame. Let them give us the time frame. Another thing that I'd like to ask is in terms of the salaries, in terms of the payment, your people, how do you pay them? Do you pay them according to the ranks or according to the levels? Or some of them are being paid according to the ranks, or there are some that are being paid according to levels? Thank you very much.
This committee is not used to hearing that the budget is okay. In fact, it's the first time I hear to say the budget is okay since sitting this committee. Any other comment, Honorable Gamede? You'll ask the prof, you'll come.
Thanks very much. Let me join my colleagues in appreciating the presentation and welcoming the commissioner, and start by also acknowledging that really it is very rare to hear that the budget is enough. We need to take this thing a step further and see what best practices you are doing with the little that you have that can do what you are doing. Secondly, I appreciate that you succeeded in getting the three commissioners that you requested. But at the same time, I thought you had made an arrangement that among those commissioners, you'll try and get someone with a disability to be part of the commission. I'm not sure whether that is still in the pipeline, because quite a number of our soldiers are in that condition, and they need someone in that condition to understand them. So this is one area which I think is really outstanding on the work. Otherwise, we really appreciate the work that you're doing, and we hope you continue. You set yourself a very big, you know, benchmark. We hope you move forward from here. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation from the Commission. And I would also like to commend the Commission for the good work that they've done so far. Chair, I've got only one question to the Commission. The Commission is concerned about the gender representativity in the SAN force.
So the commission should indicate to the to us as the committee its recommendations as well as the progress in this regard. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We're done. Any other comment?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I must apologize for coming late. I think I've indicated yesterday, my problem. But I'm reading between the lines because I'm hearing something here. Now, I wanted to pick up from Ms. I was not sure exactly. But if the Commission is concerned about the issue of gender within the Defence Force, definitely I think there are other issues like race, which I think next year, I know Titi Matanzima is about to be out of the army. And I think generally you remember when we discussed in the house, talking about the age, recommending to the minister that if we want to see this army being transformed in terms of the country's race and gender and class, then we need to make sure that the structure at the moment is properly addressed and the age question, because our understanding was that within no time the rest of the people that are coming into the army, the majority of them is only white because of the way that they've done their structure. So we were requesting then that it be considered. Now I wonder if the commission can also assist in that regard by investigating that and looking into how do we best position the country such that the army structure reflects the demographics of the country. That's one element which I think is very, very important. I wanted to know. And the another thing that I wanted maybe the commission to request. You must remember that I'm afraid because I came at the end when you are saying you are concluding that my race issue that we have talked about. But the other issue is about the disabled members of the army. I know someone that we talked to the department if they were going to take this together with them in their program and look into them. There are soldiers who were injured of duty and now they are out at home, but they are suffering, getting wheelchairs and other stuff. So I think the commission needs to look into that so that we assist those who are outside the army. There are others which are inside the army which are still working, but also in terms of the assisting devices that they need, they are still suffering because at times they need care to pray and beg those who are in town. So I think if the commission can assist us in that regard, and I can also provide the commission with the numbers of those soldiers in the area of their death. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The Prof, your commission seems to be having a clean bill of health. So you must be careful how we respond. So that members should not change their minds. Can you have your response?
Yes. Chairperson and honourable members, on behalf of the entire commission, can we just first appreciate the comments of support? As you said, our work is very difficult and we are challenged on a daily basis. But to hear what you are saying and how you value the work that we are doing would serve as inspiration and encouragement. Chair, with your support, I will make a few comments, and if you, I don't know if it's proper, if the rest of the commission will feel that they have something to say, can be allowed to add.
They are allowed to.
Okay, thank you. In terms of the issue of time frames that were raised, I think what is best is for us to submit to you perhaps a report where we can address the issue of time frames. I don't know if that would be sufficient for you. Only to say to you that this year we have so far been very timely in terms of what we have set out to achieve. I have to point out to the honourable members that the commission is, our success is dependent on the entire Defence Force and the ministry. And so we try very hard to bring about change as soon as we can, but it really depends also a little bit on others. We keep on pushing, as I've reported to you here. What is really marvelous is that we have the support of our Military Command Council, and having worked at Military Academy, I understand the whole civil-military relationship issue. So this is something that you cannot take lightly, that you get the support of the military leaders. I think that helps our work. Needless to say, the Defence Force is a big bureaucracy, and not everybody knows about the commission or even understands the commission. So we have a long way to go in terms of getting people used to the fact, how do you deal with a commission, especially if we are civilian. The issue of the release of the report, sir, as you know, we report directly to the minister. We do not have the authority to distribute our reports elsewhere, so that is her domain. The issue of the flying hours, we have gone to Makado. It was a very inspirational visit. I wish our nation can really appreciate what sterling work is being done, especially in our Air Force. Tools of trade remains one of the commission, one of the areas that we look at. We looked at the Gripens, etc., a week before it was flying for the inauguration of our president, and we saw it armed, and we met the wonderful pilots. They are very dedicated, but frustrated. If a pilot cannot fly, it is easy for another country or another company to take your pilot away from you. And we have invested a lot of money in the training of these pilots and even the technical staff throughout the Defence Force. So if anything, I would make an appeal to you to support us in that way, that we can get more flying hours for our pilots, that we can get the right kind of money to equip these people properly. I will tell you, sir, we went on that mission to Makado, and coming back we circled for 45 minutes, which was scary for the commissioners, but we were so impressed with the professionalism and concern shown by the pilots to get this commission safely on the ground. In terms of planning, sir, I'm a very hard taskmaster in terms of wanting us to plan on time. The Secretariat is there to make sure that things are being done in time, and I must express appreciation for the few members of our Secretariat. We are supposed to go to Zimbabwe, planned months ago. We cannot do the interactions directly until given authority to do so. And Mr. Motsepe here has a very hard time getting the necessary feedback out of the relevant departments who must help us. So even with Namibia, the factors that came into play there was the Independence Day and some other issues that impacted. So I wouldn't call it wasteful expenditure. We had it already, but Namibia came back last minute to change plans. It's wasteful, but not from our side. The autonomy?
What's wasteful?
No. Is
an audit opinion or?
No, sir. The honourable member said it's wasteful, but I can agree with it if we wasted the money, but we didn't. That was beyond our control. Sir, if you can support us on this drive for the autonomy, or just even more chiefs, that's all we ask. That is how the military leaders also ask. Let this commission have more teeth. You must know, sir, even though we're not complaining, you have a commission who is passionate about the work that they do. Our salaries and stuff is not, we're not at the right levels, but we don't make that an issue. Our passion is what drives us. But the military is hierarchical, and if your levels are not right, it's not easy to communicate with a lieutenant general or a chief of the defense force. It is to our credit that they are affording us the necessary respect at this point. The research, sir, you are absolutely right. It is a structural mistake to give this commission only 3 researchers. We cannot function like that. But as I said, we are hoping to change that. In terms of... I can say to you, sir, I flew personally to Soma to try and solve this issue of the research of music, to just get action for us. It's very difficult, it's been months and frustrating. Our hands are kind of tied at this point. The delinking rent from salary to the honorable members, since 94, our country has changed. The face of our soldiers has changed. And I have to say to you, we represent not only the permanent members, but also the reserve force members, who only have 180 days call up. A lot of times, these people are the breadwinners in their family. So if they are 180 days up, they have no income. We find soldiers who's in the ranks of a sergeant or a corporal for 20 years. Now, in our benchmark to Tanzania and these places, you find that they phase out their soldiers by age 40 or so. We don't do that. So you will find a corporal standing at the gate for 15 years, trapped in a little salary. That is what delinking rank from salary is about. It's not an easy problem to solve, but we have to solve this. The morale of our soldiers is low because of factors like this. And there's a security risk if your morale of your soldiers is not correct. So it is very important for all of us to correct this. The death benefits, sir, fortunately, every service also has a fund. We aim to explore how the services use these funds. So maybe we can even provide better help. What we found, we had called in one of the funds, we found that they have, say, 13 million that's there to help the families, but they say they only got 4 applications for help. Now, we know our families need help. How come there's only 4? These are the things that when we have the researchers, we can go into more. The deployment of soldiers, whenever we read the news or we heard what has happened, we're not happy ourselves. We must go see what is going on. So we do the proper planning. The planning for deployment has been there since we started. What we do, minister gives the authority, we go via Chief Shawkey, who has in all the cases approved this, but then we go to joint ops, and depending on the situation, it happens or it doesn't happen. The commission works on briefing sessions once a month where we call in relevant people from the defense force. Our last person that we called now was the chief of joint ops. He came, he did the briefing for us on Sudan, where you know it's a difficult situation. He has given us one of his generals who now has to make sure that he works with us to make this visit possible. So planning is in place. And we do it timelessly. The human aspect, Honorable Marais, you know as well as I do, it is so important. But as we visited the 7,000 people, you know, they will complain and they will bring up their challenges and they will... But by the time we leave 2 days later, those members are at a different spot. Their hope is high. to the point where I have to warn them that we do not have the power to implement. So I have to bring the hope down a bit for fear of them seeing us as useless afterwards. But morale issues, you must address. I always say to the Defense Force, yes, these are soldiers, but it's still people with a heart. And my hope is that as a commission, we bring soul to the organization, where we can also see beyond that. I am very passionate, and so is the commission, that we restore pride in the uniform of our soldiers. They must feel pride. Too many of them make the comment that they no longer wear this with pride. We have to turn that around. But the nation, sir, including Parliament, if I may be so forward, has to help us bring the nation on the side of the soldiers. If you think that 80% or so of our trade is via the ocean, you must support the Navy. You cannot not support the Navy, because our economy will suffer. Not only ours, but also that of the continent. So we're serious about restoring pride in the uniform and in the nation. The issue of disability, to both honorable members, thank you. And we heard you the last time, by that time we had already sent our request for who should serve. But I'm so happy that you are raising it again. And if there's a need to replace the commissioner again, that I give you that promise, that request will go to minister asking for a commissioner with disabilities. Because I do believe if you are the person with a disability, or you are the black person, or you are the woman, you yourself can talk best about your situation. I would like for you to know that when we visit the bases, we interact also with those in wheelchairs or whoever we find with a disability. And as you know, we have challenges in our military health situation. So they're not getting all the support services. In my own head, just to let you know, I'm hoping that eventually through this commission, we can advance a project for the wounded warrior. That is one of my real dreams. So that we can give the necessary respect to those who paid with limp or life in service of the country. In terms of transformation, Honorable Nisi and others who raised it, gender, race, age, these are all very important elements. For instance, you go to the army, you see only blacks. Who goes to fight for the country? Who's the first to fall? It will be blacks. I personally do not believe that it is only the responsibility of black people to save this country. We must all play our part, sir. And so when you come to the Air Force or you come to the Navy, we see a different picture. So we are aware that we have to change this. We are very proud of the women who have made tremendous strides. You now find even a woman who can fly a very sophisticated plane. We are proud of them, but they are too few at the top. Too few, and that is the succession issue is on our table, but because of lack of researchers, we have not been able to deal with it. I also have to say to you that we have to work very closely with all the divisions in the Defense Force. So the HR division is the one that must work closely with us, and that is the one where the transformation issue is also being dealt with. We are striving to build that relationship, and we hope that next time we come here, we can provide you with a more positive report. But you are so right. If you go to the other forces, you find there are definite exit points for their soldiers in terms of the age issue. And this is important. If you have to defend yourself, you can't send a 55-year-old person into deployment like that. Well, I don't believe I'll leave that for General Onamisa. So, yeah, I can also just say to you, sir, that the commission has a birthday. And as a birthday event, we were considering putting together a conference. Next year is the 20th year of the Constitution celebration. Perhaps we can have a conference looking at integration, the integration process. What were the decisions? How is it impacting us now? Maybe that will help to highlight some of these challenges that we experience. At this point, I think I have said what I should say, Chair. I will open up to the Deputy Chair and then the rest of the Commissioners. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson. I think some of the points you have raised will not be answered by the Commission because they are in administratively in nature. So you need to possibly call the leadership of the SANDF and the minister in particular. I say so because with our limited powers, we don't even get acknowledgements of the reports we have sent to the minister and the department. So we just send those documentations to them. Sometimes when we want an answer, it takes up time. I don't know what kind of defense is this, how it is run, because in the military I know I grew up, time is very important and speed. But if you submit a report on how soldiers should be paid, let's say in January, March, and you don't get even a piece of paper acknowledging your work, it's disappointing. So I would suggest, because I know the politics, how the political issues, how are they handled, perhaps the ruling party should go call for the minister to attend your defense study group and express the concerns you are saying. It's just an advice. What we need to do now is to call, you need to call the minister and say, Honorable Minister, in the defense budget, you said you are attending to the powers of the commission. How far have you gone on that? Can you share us a cabinet memorandum you have drafted to the cabinet to show that you are indeed reviewing the powers of the commission? There is a legitimate expectation on the part of the soldiers of this country. That legitimate expectation was caused by the then Minister of Defense, who said, I am now going to establish a commission to attend to the uniqueness of the defense force of this country, issues related to that. One of those things is that the defense force do not sit in the bargaining chamber, which is administered, I think, by a public service commission. Now we don't have powers. We have to wait what is the decision of that bargaining chamber, yet the defense is not sitting there. But if we were independent and empowered to do that, we would be speaking a different language today. She's correct, the morale of the soldiers is low. The interim reports which we submitted in 2010, 2011, it was submitted by the interim commission. You need to get a copy of that, especially the new members on the Defense Force Portfolio Committee. Begin to say, how far have you implemented these recommendations which were submitted by that interim commission? They mustn't come here and lie to you.
point by point, then you will be able to say at the end of the day, yes, the morale of our troops is good or is low. So the other thing which is, I've never discussed this with my colleagues, is the issue of the civilian oversight. Where must it be located? Should it be located in the minister's office, or should it be where it is today? I raise this issue because whenever we go to these bases and we talk to the leaders of the army, they tell you that we have submitted the requisitions, but they are stuck at the chief of the security of the Secretary for Defense. So the SecDef is composed of mainly civilians. You are saying these civilians must run these soldiers. The general says, I want ammunition now. And the civilian doesn't put much emphasis and speed on this. You say the strategy of the training of the defense must be overseen by this civilian. What does he know about? He knows about the defense force. So we need to say yes to the civilian oversight, but what powers? Where are they? They are to be located. Because this bottleneck is causing a lot of delays. And this chief of the Secretary for Defense is hardly in the country. We are frustrated on all the other side. You submit a file, no, the chief is not here. Where is he? Out of the country. What is he doing? All the time. Please. Help us to make sure that this defense is run professionally, is effective, and that the timelines are adhered to by everybody.
Thank you very much. Sir?
Thank you, Chief. I won't be having, I think, the matters are all fully covered. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Renfrew Christie, part-time commissioner. Our chairperson has asked me to deal with de-linking rank from salary. But I'd like to start with our very last slide, which, if somebody could flick it down to the last one. This is now, I'm starting my seventh year as a commissioner. I have heard something between 20 and 30,000 troops talk to us since 2009. And it was this commission, among others, that suggested there had to be a new defense review because the 1990s one was outmoded. And this is absolutely vital not only to the defense force but to the country that that defense review be funded. Now, I am an economist. I can talk for 1,000 hours on the current economic crisis worldwide. I understand. But if you do not arrest the decline, which is how the Defense Review phrased it, the decline in the defense force, by putting money in, you will not merely not have a defense force, you will not have a country. We have a real problem and we need the money. You cannot do what this defense force is being asked to do on the current budget. It is currently around 1, maybe 0.9% of GDP. The world norm is 2%. But if you have been under 2% for long enough, you've got to catch up. So central to everything this commission does, from representing the 20,000-30,000 soldiers I have heard, we do have to fund it better and we have to bite the bullet. But when I say bullet, it is a bullet, right? We're dealing with serious stuff here. If the defense force goes wrong, the country goes wrong. Now, I've been asked to talk about de-linking rank from salary. And that's clearly a budgetary issue. The problem is that you have a triangle of ranks, and you cannot have 10,000 generals. So you get people, say staff sergeants, who've been stuck in post for 20 years. And they're being paid as if they were 23 years old, but now they are 36 years old. And they do get better. They deserve more money for the skills they develop. So the proposal from the Defence Force, and this is an old one, is to de-link rank from salary so that you can carry on getting higher salary even if you can't get to a higher rank. There's a wonderful colonel in the HR department of the Defence Force, Colonel Cook, who did a splendid spreadsheet, it's very technical stuff, on how to de-link the rank from salary, but the costing was just under $2 billion. Back in 2013, now it will be more than that, it will be $3 billion. What has been suggested to us is that we try and find a way of not doing it all at once, a big bang, but of doing it where the shoe is pinching tightest. Should we just do the corporals? Should we just do the lieutenants? Should we just do the colonels? The politics of that is very difficult and relevant to our discussion today. We do not have well enough paid researchers, so our researchers are paid level 7 or something, if they were secretaries. We do not have enough researchers to take that problem forward. But it is only one piece of the overall defence review. It has to be better funded. And I will say it again, 1% is not enough. I know we've been asked to cut a billion, but this is an unusual thing. That's why we had a defence review, to point out to the country that we need to fix this defence force, we need to arrest the decline. And while I have the floor, and thank you for your patience, Chair, I'm very sorry Professor Makhoba, who is our medical expert, was unable to be with us today. He headed the military medical task team, which looked at the three big hospitals. He came up with a superb report. I've been reading government documents for 40 years, and that's one of the best I've ever read. But it too, I think, is hitting a problem of non-implementation. We have a real problem in the military health area. The hospitals are not what they should be. I don't think this is a secret. He came up with some wonderful suggestions for fixing. And you might want to have him back here and ask him about that. But in short, the Defence Review is a good document. It makes sensible suggestions. If you don't fund it, this country is in trouble.
Thank you very much. Madam Velasquez, you wanted to comment?
Yes, I wanted just to comment on the issue of the time frame. I agree with the chair that if we could be given an opportunity to provide a report on the time frame. But I just wanted to say on the issue around the death benefits, we're hoping that by the end of this financial year we'll be able to put on the table of the minister a comprehensive proposal on how that should be dealt with, which would go beyond just death benefits, but integrate some of the initiatives that are within the Defence Force currently. Thanks.
Thank you. Sir?
Thank you, Chair. Ian Robertson, part-time commissioner. Couple of issues I would like to raise. The first issue is around policy. And I allude to Prof. Christie's point that around the budget. As a commission, one has identified, for example, say 10 policies relating to career management, transformation, military skills development system, promotion and placement, uniforms, tools of trade, amongst a whole range of other things. But the point is, comes back to budget issues. For me, there are two strategic issues facing government, facing the country. firstly, budget. You can argue that budget must be determined by policy, or budget must drive policy. Right? I think it might be between those two that we need to find a way. But members of the portfolio committee need to argue in other fora that you sit in, the budget committee and other committees that you sit, that if we are to take the defense review seriously, notwithstanding the other pressures around health, around education, around social services, the bloated bill for public servants, blah, 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 you need to find a way to push whichever committees you're sitting on that the defense budget is increased incrementally. Otherwise, the defense review is going to fall on deaf ears. And we're going to be sitting around here, maybe not us as individuals, but other individuals, in 10 years' time and say, but the defense review hasn't moved one little bit. So it's incumbent upon us as commissioners, but equally it's incumbent upon members of the portfolio committee and other committees that they are representing to argue this point. The other issue that I want to talk about is, in fact, well, the powers of the commission. I think the deputy chairperson has alluded to that. I think one needs to become well acquainted with the issue of the powers of the commission and how, from your perspective, you can assist in trying to get clarity on that and moving and get the minister to come and talk about it more so that one can increase the powers. Concomitant with that is, as the deputy chair says, around civilian oversight. You know, we've been speaking about civilian oversight for 20 years. I don't think there's a very clear understanding 20 years down the line of what civilian oversight is. I happen to be working in provincial government in Gauteng, in the Department of Community Safety. And the theory is that there needs to be civilian oversight of the police service. Pre-94, you had the police developing policy, implementing policy, and monitoring policy. In any normal democratic society, you can't have that. Equally, it applies to the Defence Force. The Defence Force might be a little way further down the line in terms of understanding of these issues, but somehow I think we need to grapple with them. And as members, members of Parliament, whatever political party one is part of, why one needs to be on fair with these issues. The last point I want to raise is I cannot overemphasize Prof. Christie's points and the chairperson's points about delinking rank from salary. Unless and until that happens, or we find another way to deal with it, the morale, the individuals within the in the Defence Force is not going to improve. I use another example. If you've got a person who's very good in communication skills and is on the level of a lieutenant colonel and is able to articulate the strategies of the Defence Force, why can't that person be promoted to the level of brigadier? Not necessarily rank, but the salary. It's a similar thing what Prof. Christie was talking about. The Star Sergeant, who's very good at this thing next year. I raise these chairs because I think some of the issues that we are grappling with as a commission are going to the heart of the matter. And we might not be able to resolve it in the next 5 years or so, but at least we need to put some building blocks in place so that we can say at the end of the 5-year term, 2019, Commission and the Portfolio Committee has achieved 1, 2, 3, 4. Thank you, Chair.
That brings us to the end of the presentation. I'm sure you had with the honourable members. They've committed themselves that they will support this commission. We are reading everything that you're telling us. We are noting. We'll make a follow-up to all the advices that you have given this committee. We'll make a follow-up and
questions related back to soldiers, Honorable Marie must have intensified the recruitment.
I wanted to raise the issue, Honorable Chair, regarding the research done on de-linking salary from rank. Of course, there will be actuarial work involved because the salary scale, the details, you need to still cap even though you want to expand on it. And the financial implications, though it's raised at 2 billion and maybe 3 billion, we need to have an actually do that, project it. The issue I'm concerned is in that whole research, has the issue of the MEMS been addressed? Because to a large extent, positions are closed and people cannot be promoted because others have not left the service. Now we need to deal with the actuarial research done also for MEMS to ensure that people actually leave the system and they are seen to, and it creates the opportunity, and then we may not have to go through that exercise. Then the money is not within the system, it goes with people that leave the system. So just to look at the two, because I think those are the two issues that are the challenges within the system. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Then that brings us to the end of this presentation from the Defence Force Service Commission. We're going to move over to the UMBAT, Lieutenant General Titi Matangu. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honorable Members. We will give you a short presentation on our activities performed within the office during the financial year 2014 and 2015. To do this presentation will be Mr. Mahalime. We will join him during the discussion, the questions and comments. Thank you.
Prof, you wanted?
Listen, some of us have to fly back, so we wanted to know, must we stay or are we allowed to go?
No, you're free to go.
Okay, thank you.
And you're free to sit.
Okay, thank you.
Mohammed.
I'd like to indicate that the military ombud does not have 1415 AR because we didn't submit the 1415 APP and the quarter. We were still in 1415, we're still reporting as part of the defense force, and our AR and our ACP and our AR is part of that defense. However, for 1516, we have submitted the ACP and the third plan, and we'll have the AR for 15. Thank you, Chair. The aim of the presentation is threefold: report on the status of the office and on activities performed during 1415. And the scope is as follows. We'll look at the strategic environment, and then the corporate operations, and then lastly at the resource environment. The mandate of the office is captured in the Military Ombud Act of 2012. and it's a delegated responsibility of the military room, but he must investigate complaint laws with the office, must investigate a complaint economically, fairly, expeditiously, without fear of favor or prejudice. May resolve any dispute by means of mediation, conciliation, or negotiation, or in any other expedient manner. Must promote the observance of the fundamental rights of members of the Defence Force, and the establishment and maintenance of an appropriate HR function, establishment and maintenance of an appropriate financial management function, establishment and maintenance of an appropriate reporting function, and the development and implementation of policy in support of the office mandate. The vision of the military ombudsman is a world-leading, independent, and impartial military ombudsman institution. And the mission is to provide an independent, impartial, and expeditious complaint resolution process for serving and former members of the SAN here and the public to promote good government. And values are accountability, confidentiality, commitment, impartiality, professionalism, and integrity. And the strategic objective in the medium to long term, the office will execute its mandate through focusing on these three objectives: ensuring strategic direction to the Office of the Military Ombudsman in line with government intent and expectations, and the enhancement and maintenance of corporate operations within the office, and the administration of military ombudsman resources as prescribed by the regulatory framework. And this is the organogram of the military ombudsman. We have the corporate operation that deals with the core business of the office, that is investigating complaints and all that. And then on the other hand, you have the corporate support that ensures that the mandate of the office is carried out by providing support to the corporate business. And the corporate operations look at the intake, analysis, and investigation. And we say that the purpose of the operations environment is to resolve complaints in accordance with the prevailing regulatory framework as received within the mandate of the military ombudsman, which is complaints from serving members of the South African National Defence Force regarding their terms and conditions of service, complaints from former members of the SANDF regarding their terms and conditions of service, and complaints from the public regarding the official conduct of a member of the SANDF. And since the inception of the office, this environment has received a total of 887 cases, which were registered, assessed, and corresponded to. And a total of this 887, a total of 648 complaints were finalized. And this is how it was received over the year, and how it has been finalized, and the active cases at the end of 2015, 239. And this is just cases as per category. You have promotions, demotion, and rank review. You have those number of cases and utilization, service benefits, ETD, remuneration, grievance, and discipline, and service termination. And within the corporate operations, you have the legal services, and that is to provide effective and efficient legal services to the office by reviewing, developing and drafting legislation regarding the mandate of the military office, drafting and scrutinizing, involving the office and rendering legal support and advice to the office. And some of the achievements of this directorate are the drafting of the Military Home Book Complaints Regulation 2015. Maybe I must indicate here that draft has since been signed. It was signed on the 22nd of September 2015, and it will be gazetted soon. And we have memoranda of understanding with the Department of Defense, with the Commission for Gender Equality, with the Commission for the Protection of Rights of Cultural, Religious and Linguistic Communities, the Public Protector of South Africa, and the Government Pension Administration Agency. And we have a business agreement and an SLA with CETA. Also within operations, we have communication, which is to facilitate all communication requirements within the Office of the Military Ombud. And the highlights for 1415 are the following events were organized during the reported year: 2014 Military Ombud Symposium and the Nelson Mandela International Day, Women's Day celebration, Heritage Day, and the ICOA. And there has been outreach awareness in bases in the Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. And then another list, which is now the resource environment. We have HR there. The Office of the Military Ombud has a total of 89 approved codes, of which for 1415, 61 were funded. And the table indicates how these codes were planned on staff and the vacancies there. And this indicates that the equity figures at 31 March 2015. And we have the attrition per environment. We had 8 in the operation side and 2 in the corporate support side, which makes a total of 10. And the financial management, the office had an allocation of 41 million, and 30 million of that was for salary, and 11 million for the operating budget. However, only 30 million was spent, and of that 30 million, 23 million went to salaries and 7 million operating budget. I need to indicate here, Chair, that the under expenditure in the personnel budget was a result of the attrition that I indicated, one, two of the posts that were not filled. We had planned for 69 posts, but eventually we ended up with 46 posts. And of the 7 million in the operating budget, a 6 million of that 7 million belongs to the HR budget as part of the resettlement. It is reported, it appears in the operating budget simply because in terms of the SCOA allocation, it resides there. But the under expenditure in the operating budget, having said that, is only 1 million. Just over 1 million. Thank you, sir. That will be all.
Thank you very much. Mr. Mahalibele.
Honorable members, honorable.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. To me, this is one difficult body, so to say. You're dealing with complaints. There's a high possibility that you won't sleep at sometimes. But I just want to find out on the figures that you've given us, and you are now left with 239 cases which are not finalized, the reasons why they're not, or the difficulties of not finalizing them, and what type of cases or complaints are those. And also on the post, that there are 89 posts that are approved, but only 61 funded. What is the reason for that, according to you? Those are my two questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation. Just to add on to that, I would very much like to find out from you, you know, the type of cases that we're talking about. Because you can get ordinary complaints that is administrative of nature, and then you get complaints that is very highly technical or from a legal perspective. So, you know, because especially if one look at the human resource budget, which is huge. You know, even to spend, if you have only spent 74%, but it's of 31 million rand, which is not a small amount of money for staff. So, you know, are those like expensive legal experts that we're talking about? How many of those cases, in other words, how justified are that in terms of your typical type of cases? You might have a situation of 80% purely administrative type of complaints, or it might be 80% of very highly technical and you know, very intellectual type of cases where you need highly skilled and specialized people. Then also, I want to know how many, although it's implied in what you've said, but those people that complain about the past, are they all veterans, or, you know, are only some of them really veterans? So how many cases of veterans do you deal with specifically? Maybe that is the total. I don't know. Just want that feedback. And then in terms of the cases that you have finalized, I mean, you can get a case where you've finalized it purely because it's administrative, but how many of those cases do you really have satisfied customers, if I can use that phrase? Because all can be very unhappy, then one must ask the question, you know, what is the purpose of the ombud? Does it really serve the purpose it was established for? Because that indicates to me whether, you know, whether this organization is doing what it's supposed to be doing. Chairperson, yes, and then obviously one will have to interrogate the financial statements to really look at your spending, especially of the onward, then it means that, you know, you have budgeted for 11 million rand, but that then a once-off 6 million provided, which means that in the future it will be the amount less 6 million rand, which implies that there will be a strong reduction of operating expenditure in the future. Will that be the case? Please just give us that information. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. First of all, Thank you. Now, Chair, from 2012-13, 13-14, 14-15, we see an incremental increase in percentage in dealing with cases, 38%, 44%, and now at 57%. So we must commend the military for resolving those things, and we can see this momentum building. However, if we look at the cases that are still pending, 239 of the 553, then 57, it means 43% of the cases are still pending. If we can have an idea of what is the average? I know each case will be different, but what is the average time that is normally taken to execute or complete a case? The average time. There are some difficult cases, we understand, but the other cases. Secondly, the individuals that we have, on the overall, we see 73% of cases resolved. But I'm looking at year on year, we see the difference. The one is then, of course, the individuals that are handling the cases, if we can see them from the following slide, we see here on slide number, the page, it says here corporate operations, three of six. If we look at that, we see the nature of the cases that are coming in, what it deals with. I'd like to know when people are actually appointed or recruited to investigate cases, are they specialists in that particular area where we have problems? So we see that when a service benefits, do we have somebody that's a fundi on service benefits that are actually dealing with that? So to a large extent, when the case comes in, there are certain recommendations, investigations that can be done before we get to a final legal opinion on the matter. Service benefits, 135. The other one is service termination, 150 complaints received to date. So those are the major categories. So what I'm saying is that, are there people that are recruited that know the subject very well of HR and those labor issues, and particularly with this environment? That's the one. Then I've also referred to the issue of the autonomy. The last report that we received spoke extensively on autonomy, like the DFSC. And also, where has that discussion gone with the minister? Because this military ombud, of course, reports to the minister, Honourable Chair, and that discussion had to be raised also with the minister, although we have been appraised of it and looking at it, and of course, to be a world institution, world, I think in your vision, you make it clear you want to be impartial, independent, and of course, a leading institution internationally, and therefore your autonomy becomes a key issue, how you deal with issues. And I think I'd like to know where that discussion is at the moment with the minister as well. The issue of the posts, of course, we know the approved posts are the DPSA, that's normally done. But when we come to funded posts, it's 46. Now, out of the 61 funded posts, but the military would only recruited 46 people out of the 61. Even though you had 89 posts, Honourable Chair, that means that the military ombud has also not done the recruitment, or are there challenges in the recruitment that needs to be addressed? And of course, we look at a vacancy rate of 48%. Now, if we need to execute cases, particularly of the defense and of military veterans that are outside the defense now, that have huge problems, that are always complaining to us, we cannot have a situation of 48% vacancy rate. We have 61 posts, fill the post. Then we negotiate with, of course, DPSA and Treasury to see if we can get the rest of the post, which is at 89. So that is a concern, and I don't think the last time we also saw the performance in terms of vacancies. It's unacceptable. If it's funded, the money is available. It simply means that if money is available and you did not employ people for that purpose, there will be underspending. And unfortunately, in this case, we didn't get that one page of silver, the economic classification where things are broken down. Then we could clearly see what the expenditure was, the variance of expenditure on staff to what was actually budgeted for. We don't have the SCOBA page included. I think next time we should have a SCOBA page included so that we can actually see the underspending, the variances, and we know the areas of underperformance. So I think that is a concern for me. The other one is I don't see any reference in terms of the National Act itself, Employment Equity Act. I see all the stats here, but clearly if I look at the figures in terms of the Act of the country itself, that means that the Employment Equity Act, we look at African 83%, Indian 4%, colored 6.5% and white at 6.5%. There's no comment made in terms of the Employment Equity Act. So I'd just like to know what is the situation, and this was taken from the 46 employed individuals. The attrition is a concern. We see the attrition where it's taken place, but what are the reasons for the attrition? People resign, yes, they leave, but these people also, there's separate any reason for them leaving this institution in particular. 10 people in 1 year is a lot, because 10 people out of 46 people, then it becomes a problem. It becomes a big percentage. So I've got a concern about that, Honorable Chair. For now, thank you very much, sir.
Honorable Munisi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation from the Office of the Minister of Ombuds. Chairperson, the office has indicated that there is a need to reposition the office as a Schedule 3 public entity to achieve institutional independence. Then I would like to know what is the latest development in this regard. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Honorable Minister.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. I've got two or three questions, but I think they are related to what is being asked by me. In fact, my question is that according to the mandate of the office, it says the legislative mandate of the Minister Ombud is kept at the Minister Ombud Act 4 of 12, responsibilities delegated to the Minister Ombud Act. I didn't read any document before I came here. I could have remembered properly. But I want to hear, because I can see the basis of why there's Ombud, because of Ombud Act. And then, even within that act, there's something that we have realized, which is, that is why now we are asking for autonomy. Maybe it's the bottlenecks and the problems that are there, that's why you are asking for autonomy. And I'm just to know the autonomy that we are talking about, in fact, the relevant or not, but you want that autonomy be conflicting with the act in the first place? And what is it that you want to be autonomous about? What is it that you want to be autonomous from? What is the real problem? We have seen here the thing of autonomy, people calling about autonomy, they are autonomous, this university and everybody, and later we find that government is in a big trouble because of its autonomy. I think you need to unpack the autonomy so that we understand it clearly now, before we say we support it, and we realize it's right in the middle, that we want to stand as opposition to the very same department, right? Or the minister, or the president that has established you. I don't know where to originate, or from the legislature, if it's in parliament. But I think I need to be very clear what is it that I want to know. I'm afraid of this autonomous story that we talk about every time, and later we find ourselves in a very difficult situation, unable to rule as a ruling party in the country that is supposed to be ruling, transforming the very same transformation that you want to do because you are autonomous. Please clarify to me so that if it is relevant, it's going to assist you to do your work, we support it. The other thing that I wanted to question here is the issue of confidentiality. What is this confidentiality? Confidentiality to whom? maybe it's referring to you as the ombuds office, that complaints that you are dealing with, you become confidential about maybe the people who are coming and going and complain to you, or isn't it the very same confidentiality that creates problems for the service commission in the defense? Because the reason why that bottleneck there is this conflict. For instance, we met with the soldiers in Devon, but they complained, I couldn't go to the general, the one that was taking us up and down, and tell him, but look here, the people complaining here right now, because they said, really be careful, we might be punished here because of facts are confidentiality, all those things. Which one are you talking about here? Because it's part of your values, confidentiality. To whom? I'm not sure whether you are clear what is the better one, but I want to know about this confidentiality that you are talking about as one of your values. Are you talking about yourself, referring to yourself, or you are referring to the cases that you are dealing with, you are confidential about them? Confidential to whom? To the people that you are complaining to them? Or I'm not sure. Chatterson, there is others. I think the basic thing that I wanted to know here so that we can understand. For instance, if you go to a visit, a world leading independent and impartial military ombuds institution, that is their vision, the very same autonomy that they are talking about. The mandate, what was saying from the beginning, that's what I want to know. Why today you've got a vision that might be contradicting the same mandate or act that you were established upon? If I'm incorrect, please call me so that I do understand you properly and I can support something that I really am really clear about. Thank you very much.
Oh, over to you. Maybe you must start with autonomy. It's a big question.
Chair, with your permission, I'll delegate the autonomy question to the general.
General, I have delegated my powers to him on the support issues, and then operations will be dealt with by Mr. Njigela. The autonomy, actually independence we're talking about, is actually captured in the very act that established the office. It was the members of parliament who felt the office should be independent. We have referred to this matter in our previous presentation. Autonomy is only in terms of making decisions regarding the complaints that are submitted. We should not be influenced by anybody. We should treat these complaints fairly, expeditiously, and without any influence. The Act empowers the office to deal with these complaints like that. It is not an independence or autonomy that has nothing to do with the Department of Defense. We try by all means to follow the defense which established the office. Currently, the budget, if I can make that example, is the budget of the office comes with the budget of the Department of Defense. Recently, the minister made a ruling that the budget will be transferred to the department, to the military ombuds office, and he did that during the discussion of the COD, and we will be effecting that. It is in terms of the act again to make sure that we are empowered to deal with the issues that come before the office. It is not outside, it is not a big animal sitting somewhere dealing with issues unlawfully, illegally, and creating unnecessary structure. But we stick rigidly to the act that established the office, which was decided upon by this parliament. Maybe that is enough for independence or autonomy. And this is in line with our benchmarking exercises. I think I briefed the committee. I even invited the committee to come to our head office so that we can give you detailed briefings. But our difficulty, Chairperson, we sometimes come to the members here and we give the briefings, and sometimes we meet new members and we have to start again. So we still have that invitation to honorable members to visit us. It is not just me. We have other youngsters who would like to see you so that we can give you thorough briefing, including those briefings which we actually shared with other members. It's nothing new in South Africa. It is new. I mean, it is not something new in the world. It is new in Africa. There is an office like this outside many countries in Europe and in America. We don't have an office like this in the African continent. We have someone who sits in the office of the public protector, only one individual, in many West African countries, but not in SADC and other areas. So we benchmarked against the best practice. I gave this briefing to the members. We visited Canada, we visited Ireland, we visited UK, we visited Oslo in Norway, we visited Geneva, we visited the United States of America. We wanted to go to Namibia. Somebody said there is such an office, but we were told actually it's not true. We would like to visit Asia and Africa, but in many countries they don't have an office like this. So it is not an independent office, independent from Parliament, from the Ministry of Defense, no. Independent as far as making decisions that we have to submit to the minister. Thank you. Mr. Mahalimela on support issues.
Thank you, General. The people will visit your office in the next oversight. It's long overdue, we'll do that. Mahalimela.
Thank you, Chair. Indeed, we have 89 approved codes, but we, for 14-15, we only planned to start 61. However, we couldn't reach the 61 because, as indicated, we had attrition, 10 people left within that, and within the period. And another thing that made us not to reach the planned target is the fact that the post of the deputy ombud and his or her staff is not yet filled. It's in the process of being filled. But we're talking now about five posts there. The reason we are not yet 89, we took a decision as an office that we will phase in the appointment over time. We won't start the whole 61, and then the funding I've made available will stick to those planned figures that we need until we reach 89. And on the question of the 6 million, the resettlement, this is a resettlement that is linked to recruitment. Typically, when you recruit a person from Cape Town, for instance, and that person has to relocate now to Pretoria, this is the type of resettlement we're talking about. And it is noted that in future, the score breakdown will be included in the presentation so that the expenditure can be, the flow of the expenditure can be visible. I think. And Chair, I will allow my colleague, Mr. Njigera, to address the other side. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair, and the honorable members. I will deal with all the operational questions that were asked, starting with the first one that related to the finalization of the complaint. I think in particular it related to the statistics that were provided. Now, I think when one considers the statistics and the amount of time that is required to finalize the case, there will obviously be varying time frames that you will require depending on the complexity of the matter itself and depending on the availability of documents and the availability of witnesses. Now, you will note that in terms of the Act currently, it does not prescribe any cut-off date as to when, from what date, the Ministry of Ombuds should be accepting complaints. And I think that's the primary challenge that we have. We get complaints sometimes that even predate the establishment of the SANDF as we know it today. In other words, that predates even 1993 when the current dispensation was worked out. And now, if you were to be legalistic in your approach, you could say those matters fall outside the mandate of the office. But I think as a policy decision has been taken that where those people could be assisted, the office must make an effort to assist those people in terms of those complaints. But of course, the challenge you will get in dealing with those is the issue of availability of information, the people that were involved in those decisions at the time, and of course it affects the turnaround time in the validation of all of those. But even in the ones that are current, that is between 1993 and 2015, you will find that whenever a matter gets to us, it has already been through four levels of being dealt with within the grievance process. Now, if you look at the individual grievance regulations, the grievance process starts at the unit level. It goes to a formation level. Then it proceeds to the chief of the service. Once that is done, then it proceeds to the head office where it's dealt with by the grievance board. Now, all of that requires that whenever we get a complaint, we have to unravel whatever has happened in all those different levels to see exactly what will be the appropriate relief, if there is any that should be granted. So that is quite an enormous exercise that has to be done, unfortunately, if you are to pronounce on what you think is the appropriate thing that should be done in a particular instance. So that process itself, it has some impact on the turnaround times. But I think, again, we need to say that if you look at the statistics, we're starting from 2012. Now, you will remember that although the office was launched in 2012, there was effectively no person in the office. But of course, the grievances or the complaints started flowing in. There was only the military on board. And to deal with all that workload at the time, he had to contract a law firm to assist him until he had the staff. The first staff of the office only reported from February 2013. Now you will see that in the backlog that you are carrying over from 2012-2013, it's an amount of 189. And over the next financial years, we were really trying to deal with the backlog. And of course, although we started staffing in 2013, the capacity that was there was very limited. We had only two investigators. One of them left in the very same year, so we effectively had one. And we basically had intake officers and analysts. Now the matters in the office are categorized into two categories. One is those matters that are capable of early resolution, in other words, that you can deal with by means of conciliation and mediation. Then there are matters that should be referred for a full-blown investigation. Well, that's where the bigger challenge is, because those matters require a longer term of investigation than those that are capable of early resolution. So these are the dynamics that we have to deal with on a daily basis, and those issues have an impact on the turnaround time. But of course, Chair, you will note that, I think as Honorable Esau indicated, that over the years, there has been an increment in terms of performance in turnaround time. But of course, it is still a concern that there is still about 43% of cases that are not finalized. But I think as the capacity in the office increases, you will see the performance is also increases proportionally to the capacity that you have. And we're hoping that by the time we reach the 61, which is the planned capacity at the moment, we should be able to cope at least and reduce the backlog that we carry over every year. Chair, if I may proceed to the issue of the complaints from the veterans and how many satisfied customers do we have. Like I indicated, Chair, currently in terms of the law, there is no turnaround time. I mean, there is no cut-off date. But of course, in the complaint regulations that Mr. Makgalemele referred to, which the minister approved about a couple of weeks ago. We are now prescribing a cut-off date as to when the matter should be referred to the office of the Minister of Health after the decision of the grievance board. That will assist to make sure that we deal with matters that are current as opposed to matters that date back to 1993. Unfortunately, that's the reality we're dealing with. And we can't ignore those complaints for the simple reason that those complaints were one of the driving force behind the very establishment of the office, because there were a lot of unresolved matters, and we find ourselves still having to deal with those. So there are a lot of matters that are referred to us that relate to veterans. When I'm saying veterans, I'm saying veterans under the current Defense Act and people who may have served in 1985 or left in 1945. We still get complaints from people who say, my father served in a World War. I haven't received a medal. Now, ordinarily, that's not a matter that we will really deal with. But we will try and see who is the person within the Defense Force that can help with those. And those matters will be referred for them to get their assistance. So there are those matters. But of course, there is another dynamic here, is that there is now a Department of Military Veterans. We get a significant number of complaints from people who are saying, we have been trying to get ourselves registered as military veterans, and we are not getting any positive response. We are being ignored. Now, if you look at the act that governs the military veterans and the one that governs us, there is a very fine line between what you may deal with and what they have to deal with. In as much as we want to deal with some of the issues, we have to respect the processes that the military veterans department is going through. So what we will normally do, we will refer those matters to the Department of Military Veterans and request them to interact with the complainant on those matters, because we can't determine as an office of the Military Home Board who gets onto the database as a military veteran. The Military Veterans Act prescribes the criteria and gives the power to the department to register people, so we can't deal with those issues. How many certified customers do we have? Chair, this is a problematic question, and I think internally we have discussed the issue that we would like not to see ourselves as having customers. We would like to see ourselves, somebody referred to independence. When we speak of independence in our case, we are not speaking only of independence from the Department of Defense. We are only speaking of independence from the complainants themselves, because we are not on the side of the complainants. We are not the side of the department. We are a third party that is supposed to adjudicate. So we are very careful not to see ourselves, not to see the complainant as a customer, because we do not represent the complaint. We are on the side of the queue. So we are very careful of using customer satisfaction as a test of our effectiveness. And we are rather looking at the finalization rate. That's why we're saying we are still concerned about our finalization rate, as opposed to whether the complainant is happy or the DOD is happy, because we are crossing the fine line once we start to see ourselves in that way. But we are planning, we just established a research and development component within the office. We are hoping that they will look at the trend as one of their first tasks. What are the trends? They will do surveys, not only on the complainants, but also on the side of the DOD to see what are the perceptions of the office itself. And we think that will give us an idea as to whether we are doing our job better. The average time to finalize the matter, Chair, will vary in terms of the criteria that I just spelled out. But if you look at the APP, you will find that we are prescribing a period of 90 days for all those matters that are capable of early resolution. Anything that is not capable of early resolution can take off from 180 days, which is basically a period of 6 months. Now, if you look at what we are doing internally, we have established what we call dashboards, which is where we hold our staff accountable for the cases that are allocated to them. So anything that is less than 190 will basically be categorized as a green. Once it exceeds the 90 days, then it becomes an amber. Once it exceeds the 180, it becomes a red. Then it means people should be held accountable for the failure to finalize the matters within the prescribed time period. But that is a benchmark
that we use for ourselves. But given all the dynamics that I've stated, Chair, with regard to the history of where we come from, not all matters are always possible to finalize within those time frames. Chair, in terms of appointment of specialists or experts in different areas, I think what we need to say here is that in recruiting staff for the office, we try to recruit people from different backgrounds. You will find in the current capacity that there are people who have an HR background, which is essentially the significant lot of complaints that we get, because you will remember we are limited to conditions of service. Now conditions of service by their nature are HR related. So about over 80% or 90% of the matters that you deal with are really personnel related issues. So we look at people with HR background, labor relations, we have lawyers within our office, we have forensic auditors. So we have try and recruit that kind of balance so that if there is a specific or specialized complaint, we have somebody who can at least be able to understand what a complainant is talking about. If it gets technical, that at least we have the technical base to look at those. But it may be, of course, as we evolve as an office, more expertise in different areas that are applicable to the Defense Force may be required. But we have tried in the combination that we have to recruit even from within the Defense Force, where people are prepared to share the uniform, so that at least we have people who understand the system itself and its processes. On the issue of Schedule 3, General, I think you have covered it. I think the question was, how far are we in engaging with the Minister? I think in the last COD, this issue was for the first time tabled with the Minister. And I think she appreciated, because she indicated that for the first time she has a clear idea what these issues are. So that engagement is taking place at the COD level between the Military Ombud and the Minister, and we're hoping that in the next couple of months it's going to take shape as to what this independence means. But like I indicated, it's not just independence from government or department, but it's independence in the sense that we are not only operating independently, which we are confident we are doing, but an ordinary complainant or an outsider must not perceive us on the other to be not independent. The issues of budget, the issues of processes that we have to subject ourselves in buying a pen, in hiring a person, in procuring a vehicle for the purposes of investigations, at the moment all of those are subjected to DOD system, which is not different from what the Commission is experiencing. But sometimes in an organization as big as a Defense Force, you are not always the priority because of the size. They obviously consider their own operations a priority, and you are always at the back. Chair, I think those were the confidentiality, Chair. The confidentiality in our case relates to the responsibility that we have to the complainant, firstly, because we are dealing with personal information. Now you will know that Parliament recently passed what we call a Copy Act, which speaks about the issue of protection of personal information. So it deals with the complainant, him or herself, depending on the information that he makes available to us. We deal with medical issues, which by their nature we may not disclose to anybody. We have to treat them confidentially. But secondly, we deal with DOD or military documents and information. And therefore, under the Act, you will see we all of us have to be vetted by Defense Intelligence to make sure that we treat the information accordingly. So confidentiality is cross-cutting in the sense that it deals with the confidentiality of the employee and the confidentiality of the DOD information. Mandate and independence, I think that has been dealt with, Chair. I think, Chair, I should stop there unless I left something.
The two issues that you need to respond to, so Honorable Chair, is the issue of the employment equity and then also the causes for attrition. I'd just like to add also on just on the communication, the other strategy for communication to the soldiers and former soldiers as well. Thank you.
In fact, I'm a little bit happy here at the end, because I do understand now what they're talking about when they talk about this autonomous, the processes and other things within the system. That's what they're talking about. I'm happy about that. I was going to ask, once the act is clear, which I'm trying to look at this constitution about this act, because there, I don't know this one, which is quoted there. Mandate of the office, legislative mandate of the Minister of Duty is captured in the Minister of Duty Act, Act 4 of 12. What is that? The responsibility delegated to the military on Bhutan. Is that Act 4 of 2012? Because most of the time, we are not part of the committees. The system here is working the other way around. Sometimes you are in another committee, the party comes and changes you. You come in here, now it means the office or anyone must explain because you are new here, or you've not been new, but you are not part of the meeting that was present. Hence, members must not be afraid to explain if they have not quoted it properly so that we understand. So my point is, continuously we will be asking questions, because sometimes we are new here, or sometimes we are not part of that meeting, and we are not running around reading everything. We won't be able to do that. You are the best placed people, because you advise us. Information with you from time to time after the act has been passed. You are the most people who are implementing the thing, so you understand them better than us. What changed after 5 years, and most of the officials are within the departments or this office. So my point is, the Honorable Matanzo must not be worried when I'm asking, and don't make me feel that I'm failing because I'm not reading all. I don't know, but the issues that we are new are changed from time to time, and we need to understand. But I'm happy about the explanation that I do understand now. It's about processes. But you didn't say at the beginning you saw the interference or you are being influenced. That's what I wanted to ask. But the last person has explained clearly what is the problem, why you emphasize on autonomy. So I might not need any answer.
Thank you very much. Honorable Zanabe.
Chair, for starters, I must say I sympathize with the office of the Ombudsman. You know, just to be established, just to deal with complaints, is not an easy task. Just to be established, just like dealing with the poor. So your main job is just to deal with complaints, and it's not an easy task. So I really sympathize with him. However, on the issue of posts as presented, I don't think there will be any convincing reason to justify why those funded posts were not filled. I think this is the same report that we got last year. The office of the deputy was not there. So in 12 months' time, really, you really need to be convincing to say why those posts were not really filled, because funds were there. There we really need to convince us.
Thank you. Over to you. Thank you, Chair. On the question of attrition, Chair, as indicated, we lost 10 people. And the reasons there are, if you look at the office is attract young people. And most of our staff are very young people, and young people by nature are restless. They job hop, and before they even switch on their computer, they are already applying for another job. So we have that project. And in terms of equity, Honorable Lisa, during 14, 15,
15, we, in terms of male lane, we have 48% male and 52% female. And where we're lacking behind is in terms of wife, we have very few wives. And in terms of Asian, we are okay. And yes, it's only in terms of white and maybe in color. But we are addressing that with the future starting. On the question of poll, Honorable Kamete, I know that the post of the deputy has been hanging for a long time, and it's most of that is not in our hands. And maybe again, I'll invite the after I've said what I'm going to say, I'll invite the general again to come in here. If it was not the attrition and the deputy on the post, we would have met our target, because we had 46 and then 10 left, meaning that there would have been 56. Now, if you add the 5 posts from the military, deputy military, 61, we would have met that target as planned. But at this point, maybe the general would like to indicate why it's problematic to, or it's just difficult to fill the post of the deputy.
Yes, delegating upward. President, the post of the deputy military ombud is a presidential appointment. It is a matter that we are dealing with. I met the president 2 times discussing this particular post. He is the only person who can appoint this individual, whether it's a lady or a man. The process has started. The minister has been engaged to carry on with the process of appointing, because we are doing the staff work for the president. This Act number 4 of 2012, which established the office, mandates the president, in consultation with the military ombud, to appoint this deputy. And we are discussing this, but as you would understand, it's very difficult for me to say, President, you will appoint today, or Minister, you will submit today or tomorrow. All we can do is to knock at the doors. Please, Minister, we need to submit this, the names to the President. We have started that the last year, but as indicated, I briefed you on this possible appointment, but we are still working, because the individual must have experience over military experience. That is the act. So we will try to encourage the minister to forward the papers to the president. So we are dealing with that issue. Maybe, Mr. Chair, I can also indicate those things which I think make me happy. The fact that the minister has signed the regulations which will give effect to the act is a source of joy to me, because we will now work in terms of the regulatory framework. And the second one which makes me happy is that the minister has approved our benchmarking visit to Denmark. And secondly, the office will be visiting the Czech Republic as a member of the international community. We meet annually. We met in Geneva last year. This year we will be meeting in Czech Republic to present our papers and to share experiences with other ombud institutions around the world. The third one, we military units under the command of the Chief of the Defense Force in September this year, all of them, to go and explain the structure of the office, the functions, modus operandi, how does it work? Because some soldiers don't understand. So they bypass the channels of command to submit their complaints to us. Unfortunately, the Act says don't attend to those. Because it will be defying or undermining the command channels. But we have this outreach program visiting all of them, explaining. Hopefully by next year, members will understand exactly how to submit their complaints. But we are happy that we have actually visited all of them. The complaints that are submitted to the Minister of Defense members, we have been submitting these complaints. Only two were turned back for minor adjustments with regard to the payment of some soldiers in the Navy or sailors in the Navy. But most of our findings and recommendations are actually accepted by the Minister to be implemented by the Defense Force. And that is where sometimes the challenge is encountered. We are unable to check the implementation of those recommendations. The fourth one is, I did tell or inform the members that we have an MOU between us and the Office of the Chief and the Secretary for Defense. Due to the effectiveness of this MOU, we're giving effect to decisions that the Chief has undertaken, because we have been submitting some complaints from people who feel their ranks from either MK and ABLA were very low at integration, even though we had a rank review. But the Chief has undertaken to have an audit committee just to make sure that all those which were submitted are properly dealt with. And it is pleasing to note that some few members have gone through his system and are being addressed now. So instead of having many of these coming to our office, the Chief has actually taken a decision to look at the audit of this. I know that there will be unhappy, what do you call them, customers, because the truth is that sometimes if my Tanzania, you think you should be a sergeant, and the process says you can't be a sergeant, then the system is very bad for you. But we have seen some decisions that are coming through through that liaison with the Chief of the Defense Force. I have indicated that the Minister has taken a decision with regard to budget, although this will be will follow a process with the accounting officer and the CFO to establish capacity to make sure that we address this decision, but it makes us happy. We have, I think we have addressed this issue of the deputy military ombud. I'm actually keen to have this person, especially the commander-in-chief indicated that maybe it should be a lady who has experience over 10 years in the military. We are addressing it. I think soon the minister will call me to say, what about this candidate? It will not be advertised like that of the military ombud. All other posts will be advertised. We have been doing that. But this one, the president will appoint the individual when he is ready. Thank you. I just wanted to share those chairs so that you know our whereabouts from this weekend.
Thank you very much, General. You have attended to all the questions, I guess so. Now, that brings us to the end of the session. And thank you very much. Then I would like to thank members of the Defense Force Service Commission for staying and supporting the Umbat here. That was very good of you. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.